There's still more on confounding. You have to talk about study design. You have to talk about study design. My students are really at the 50th percentile on the tests for high school, for college. They're not at the best students, okay? And so this is how I present the kinds of studies, and I use letters. I grade the different studies. So an A-plus study is a science study that's repeatable. An A-minus study is one that involves randomization. It's not as good as one that's repeatable, but it's close. Skip this. On the observational side, a longitudinal is typically better than a snapshot. Not always, there are different factors, but in general. And I don't distinguish here between cohort and retrospective, but you know, there's more detail that can come. This is the one that I want to talk about, because this is the one that is seldom, if ever, mentioned. And yet, it's the most important for that top group of students. Business, econ majors, they're changing prices, changing commissions, they're intervening. But the subjects choose whether they buy or don't buy, whether they're there that day. The politicians can change the laws. The people move away. They change the schools. The people move. They can't control the subjects. And basically, this works out. It can happen in nature with epidemics and natural disasters, or it can happen in politics, the military, where you change the laws and the policies, or in education, where you change the teaching. You can't randomly assign the teachers or randomly assign the students. And even if you could, they'd know. They know which one they're in. So these are quasi-experimental. And we need to talk about this group because it's subject to confounding, but not as much as a pure observational. Okay, so what's the difference between the kind of research that's done by journalists and the type that we do? Well, we've got the research question, and we've thought about it, and we go through the whole cycle very deliberately, and hopefully a few changes. How do the journalists do it? Well, they do all these things, but they do them in parallel. They jump back and forth. Well, if I change this measure here, oh, this association is going to change here. I think I'll change the question. They're doing all of these things back and forth until they get coherence, and it's journalistically significant. Not statistically significant, journalistically. They've got a story. And students need to realize that. This is not a statistical process that's deliberately done in advance. Everything is going to be done to achieve journalistic significance. And our graduate students may do this, and our researchers may even do this too. Because they're going to get published, which is more likely. They have a big effect size or a small?
Big.
Can they get a bigger effect size? Sure. We just change the definitions, change the groups, etc. So this isn't just journalists. Okay. So, where are we at? I said I've tossed in a whole lot of new things. That must mean less time for inference. It's even worse than that. I'm saying we need to do more on inference or on chance. Let me just jump right into it. I'll skip what statistically significant means. I will argue that frequentists are not justified in telling students to reject the null, accept the alternate for a statistically significant outcome. There's no part of frequentist theory that says that. None. And we shouldn't teach it as frequentists. We should let subject matter experts do it, which is oftentimes what we do. We give them a p-value. You decide. It's like Caesar washing his hands. But we don't do it. But the guy's guidelines said that statistics should be used for decision-making. We're abdicating if we don't do it. So, what do I propose? Da-da-da-da. Okay, this violates the guy's guidelines. So what do? We should embrace teeny Bayes, simple Bayes, Bayes' rule. We all know Bayes' rule, right? It doesn't involve going into a whole other philosophy or epistemology, etc. If we can say the alternate is more likely than the null, which is what Fisher did. He's putting fertilizer on plants. He expects the plants to grow. He's not pouring acid on plants, right? He's expecting that the treatment is going to be positive. It's going to work. As long as this is true, then it follows, under a very simple model, that you can do the inverse, and things work out nicely. Now, you may say, look, Shield, you've lost it. We've taught this for decades. But I remember the first time I ran across Jessica Utz with a p-value of what I thought was 10 to the minus 18th. That's the smallest, teeniest p-value I've ever seen in my life. But it's for ESP. And I realized I was not convinced. And I thought, why not? In this case, do I think the alternate, ESP is real, is more likely than the null? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Students need to know that. Professionals are never going to do this, but when you're out there data mining, looking for things, you take on really weird stuff, low probability stuff, and then it's statistically significant, and you hold it up to the world. You're just kind of left there saying, well, we can't be sure. Okay. So anyway, that's an assertion that I'm making. Let's talk differently. Do you remember Cinderella? And do you remember a recent wedding? Did you notice the similarities?
No.
Now, I took this off the web, so maybe they photoshopped it. But I never know. Yeah. But do you really think this is coincidence? And we're a statistician. It could be coincidence. It could be she saw the Cinderella story when she was young and she said, that's what I'm going to have. And you, buddy, are going to wear one of those sashes across there. Just shape up. Could be. Now, why do I bring this up here? We need to teach more on coincidence. As samples get larger, statistical significance is everywhere. I define big data, every association is statistically significant. Every. That's big data. But coincidence becomes more likely as the data gets bigger. They need to see that. So I teach them the law of very large numbers. Qualitatively, the unlikely is almost certain, given enough tries. You say, well, that's true. Given enough tries. The quantitative part is a rare outcome is more likely than not. In N tries. Where the probability of success is 1 over n. The students say, oh, I mean, we look at it, that's the expected value. Probability times n equals 1. But what I've done here is to say it differently, not just that's what's expected. It's more likely than not. And I think that's a more powerful statement. We don't normally stress that side of it. It's more likely than not that if you've got a success rate of 1 on n, and you do it n times, you're going to see it. The students run into these hotspot things, little kids having, you know, growing a third ear next to a nuclear reactor, etc. It could be a nuclear reactor. It could be coincidence. So how do I help them see it? Three ways. Flipping coins, grains of rice, and the birthday problem. And basically I've created Excel spreadsheets that flip coins, and they're looking at, you know, two heads, that's 1 in 4, three heads, four heads, 1/2 to the 4th, over here we've got like 13 heads, and they're realizing, that's really unlikely. Isn't that statistically significant? And here's where you want to hesitate. You don't want to say yes. Why not? 2 to the 13th, one chance, 2 to the 13th, isn't that statistically significant? And I'm saying, you don't want to say yes. Because the question is ambiguous. It would be yes if a person had said, before the flip was made, we're going to see 13 in a row. That would be statistically significant if it appeared. But after the fact, seeing all the things that occur, and then pointing at that is like the farmer painting the bullseye on the barn after doing the shooting. That is not statistically significant. It's expected. Students need to see coincidence in large sizes. And then I do it for grains of rice where there's 1 chance in 10. So 2 grains, that's 1 chance in 100. 4 grains, that's 1 chance in 10,000. It's the same thing. And they're getting these really improbable things. But again, the improbable, the unlikely is almost certain given enough trials. The birthday problem. I've used it. My students never really got it. What I do is put seven people on four sides of a table and randomly pick birthdays, and I ask my students, how many combinations are there between the seven students up here and the seven over here? And they, one way or another, say 49. Well, each of the adjacent ones is like 50, 100, 150, 200, and then we do a cross and so forth. The minute they see 360 connections, they use the law of very large numbers and say, well, if the chance is 1 in 365 of a match, and we have 365 matches, duh, it's not a surprise. They need to see the number of matches. So this is what I do on law of very large numbers. So what do we do with statistical significance? I've got, what, 2 minutes left? 1 minute left? Follow Utzon DeVoe, skip the derivation of the sampling distribution, just use 1, 2, 3 for the confidence levels. We don't want to go any higher than that. And I focus on statistical significance, not the p-value. My students, they're going to be in a research course if they need p-value. It's just statistical significance. I've got some shortcuts, and I use the non-overlap of the intervals to say that's sufficient for significance. So, jumping ahead, I've got some shortcuts for chi-squared that I carry in my head. So I know whether a chi-squared is statistically significant if it's more than 2 times the number of rows. I can just do that. For correlation, if you've seen the stuff on the web on correlation, even though you have the high correlations, students need to know that doesn't apply to longitudinal data. Doesn't apply. The years are not randomly chosen out of a hat. Okay, so how do I show the most important thing on inference? Here we have low birth weight babies. Moms that smoke are more likely to have low birth weight babies than moms that don't. The intervals don't overlap. It's statistically significant. But if I standardize, they overlap. And what I've shown students is a significant relationship can become insignificant after I control for something. I think it's absolutely imperative, and I do this in the regular class, that we need to show this. I consider not showing this professional negligence. Our students, most of them will never see another statistics class. And if they go away thinking significance is etched in stone, we never said that. But we never showed them anything to the contrary. That's wrong. So that's the end of my presentation. Fill out the form. I'm really interested in the bottom question. What do you think about fielding 3 courses? And give me your plus and minus reasons on that. So have at it. Thanks for attending. Bye-bye.